Everyone, welcome to another episode of the Let's Do It Afraid podcast. Today we have another special guest. She is a bilingual certified coach. She's a speaker, a facilitator with over 17 years of experience. She was a former engineer turned into a leadership and mindset coach. And she's also a mom. So everyone, please welcome Mayra Hernandez.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure and an honor, and I've been looking forward to it for a couple months. Yeah. So I think you guys are both doing a great job with the podcast and trying to reach out as many women and men and anybody that's listening with the topic of fear, you know, like and doing it afraid, doing it past getting past your fear.
Thank you. Yes, that was something that was very important to Yvette and I, was helping, even if it was just one person, kind of navigate something that I think we both have felt we've been struggling with in our own personal lives. I know that I've struggled a lot with being afraid of things and that kind of holding me back from doing the things that I really want to do. So I just got to the point where I was like, I'm done. I'm over this. I need to stop being afraid, or not stop being afraid, but just stop letting fear stop me from living my life.
What was your moment, your call to action, where you're like, I'm done? Because I'm curious about that. That's like what your spark moment, right?
I think I was just tired of being sad all the time and just feeling really depressed and really alone and just feeling like fear had totally consumed my whole life. And I just remember I would cry every day in the bathroom and I'd be like, why am I so sad? I have this beautiful life. You know, I have a wonderful husband. I have two beautiful, healthy kids. We have a home. We have food. Like, we don't really have, you know, anything that we're really struggling with. But it was just something inside of me where I just felt so sad all the time, every day. At the end of my day, I would just cry in the bathroom. And that's when I was like, I've had enough. Like, something has to change. So, because, you know, nothing changes if nothing changes, right?
For me, it was like, I mean, I have all this knowledge in me. I talk all the time and I work from home. I'm so tired of being by myself, and just working from home can feel very lonely. So I need to get an outlet. And then I started taking therapy and it helped me, but then I only had like 6 weeks to do it. I was doing different kinds of therapy, so it trying to figure out what helped me cope with my anxiety and all the mental health struggles I was going through at the moment. And then I was like talking to my therapist. I think it was one-on-one sessions that I had with him. I don't know if it was CBT or if it was regular one-on-one. I can't remember exactly, but talking to him really sparked me all the time. And he was like, I see so much potential in you. Like, don't let this fear control you. And there's so many different things that you can do with all the knowledge you have. And he would give me different ideas all the time. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know how I didn't see that within myself, right? I don't know what it was, but he saw it within me. And then he started talking to me about his podcast. And I was like, oh my God, I actually just started one randomly over the weekend. I had a random thought. And that was my previous podcast that I had with a colleague. It didn't work out in the end, but now we have this beautiful podcast. And I'm very excited because it's totally different. Like, the idea behind it is different. Before, we were tailoring more toward mompreneurs and how to find something to do outside of being a mom, right?
Yeah.
But this is more geared towards mental health, and I feel like this is my therapy sometimes when I'm like, I'm in therapy for a week or some period of time, and I'm like, this is my therapy because I don't feel as alone, you know?
Yeah, and it gives you the right, the space to be and call out what's in your mental space so you can bring it out and kind of look at it and have, you know, Maida or anybody else be like, oh yeah, I see it, or can I challenge you, or like, yeah, it's like almost like an element of coaching, right? And that's why I became a coach, because I recognize that through that process, like when you're just by yourself and you're just, I'm thinking, you only think the way you think, and that's limiting, right? We all have our limiting beliefs. What gets you out to disrupt the ways that you already think, right? Especially if they're negative and unproductive. It's a therapist, it's a coach. It could be that, again, that conversation with a friend that's really there to hold space, witness and listen, you know, without asking you a million questions for them to capture information. And that's not about that. So I love that we're talking about fear and we're talking about therapy and bringing it all in, because it's important to distinguish that, you know, for some people, fear is really elevated. Like, I was one of those people. I was raised with a lot of fears. Like, it wasn't just afraid of the night, afraid of catching a cold, afraid of, you know, all the things that your parents tell you when you're little, right? But My parents had a lot of fears themselves that were put on by their parents. They lived in different times, a different generation. So I grew up with just a lot of fears. And then on top of that, I had childhood trauma. I was sexually abused as a child. So I'm bringing this to say that the fears, if you feel like you're still paralyzed by fears in the now, find a therapist, right? Because some of those fears are rooted in your body's natural response to try to cope, right, with that trauma. And it's unresolved. And it needs like the expertise of a therapist to help you move through that. So I'm so grateful to my therapist and that I found the modality of therapy that I'm currently still attending, which is EMDR. It's like eye movement desensitization therapy, something like that. But basically, your therapist is using like either sound, like to do like bilateral stimulation between your right hemisphere and your left hemisphere of your brain to communicate, basically, because the communication somehow has been severed. Like your amygdala, when it's in constant fear, your amygdala gets so enlarged that you're kind of, that's like your default, like your go-to. So my experience with therapy, like I can tell, like I am not as quick to go to my amygdala and go into my fear response, which is then anxiety, then you have adrenaline and cortisol racing, like all of these cascade of hormones, right? And neurotransmitters. I feel like through the work I've done, I can even feel my amygdala kind of getting smaller and smaller, like I'm not defaulting to that. And it's important to know that that's a thing that coaching is not going to get you there. Like if you have trauma and you have forms of it in PTSD or others, coaching is not for you. You need the modality of therapy to help you heal some of the past. And then coaching is different, right? Like from a different place, you want to reach your goals. I have a vision. I am afraid, and I've worked with my therapist on my fears, but I want to push myself further. Like, hey, I'd love to work with you. I'd love to support you. Like that's a little bit different. We're coming from a different place.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Therapy can be very powerful. I've also been in therapy for about a year now, a year and a half maybe. And my therapist also was the one that was kind of pushing me and saying, "Myra, you're never going to stop being afraid. Like it's never going to end, but this is how you have to push through it, right? You have to do things even when you're afraid." And that's kind of where I was like, oh, let's do it afraid. Like that's where like the name comes from, because it's like I am afraid. I'm always going to be afraid,
Yeah.
but I'm going to do it anyways. And so you're right, a therapist can be really inspirational in a lot of ways and can help you with so many amazing tools to kind of help you cope with those things. But we do want to start with our first question that we do like to ask all of our guests. That is, what is a fear that you're currently struggling with today?
Ah, okay. The fear of death, it's one that's real for me, especially with my 3.5-year-old. So my family is in Venezuela. I have a couple brothers that are in the US but spread out. Yeah, I have a fear of what if something happens to me or my husband, like who's gonna care for my child? Right? That to me is very real. And at times it has hit me more deeply where I would be like crying just to think about that. Or let's say my husband and I were out, like, oh, let's go out for a date night and we have a babysitter. And let's say the date night was in San Francisco. That would trigger that fear. And it would be like all these thoughts, like, what if something happens to you on the way there? Blah, blah, blah. All the stupid things that your fears tell you that it's gonna happen, but it's not happening, obviously. So I build contingency plans and then try to come to the now, right? What is now? We're well, we're alive, we're gonna drive safely. Like we are gonna try to do all the things that are in our power to make it there safely and back. Right? So like managing your thoughts and like the reactions, noticing, right, what your body is experiencing because it's real. You're experiencing the symptoms of fear. Your amygdala is triggered, again, the adrenaline, the cortisol. But am I going to go ahead and not move forward with my evening because fear is here and it's overpowering me. If I let it, yes. But I think what I would love for people to leave with as they listen to this is that, yes, it's paralyzing. Yes, it feels real. Yes, it's scary. But you ultimately still have a choice. You have a choice to number one, give it space and recognize what you're experiencing, and then choose how you want to mobilize yourself. Okay, fine. I'm so afraid I'm going to, let's cancel our evening and let's not go anywhere and let's not live our lives. Or, okay, let's go. I'm so afraid. I'm so worried. I'm going to text the babysitter a million times, but I'm still going to move. I'm going to move forward with my life. Like, it's like, how do you want to manage your way through fear? Because it's what your therapist said. I love that your therapist said that. Yes, we're going to live with fear always, but your capacity to be with fear, to manage the fear, your fear response, how you're going to move forward, that's going to change. And that's going to be like dialing up, right? Like I was at one, my capacity to deal with it. Now I'm at a 10. No problem. That's not, I'm not letting that get in my way.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that you said that. And I do think that that's a fear that a lot of moms deal with every day. I think most of my mom friends, if I asked them that question, that would be their exact response is, you know, being afraid to die and leaving our children behind. Something that kind of helps me a lot with fear, I don't remember the name of it, but when you kind of ground yourself into the now and you're like, okay, what can I see? What can I touch? You know, what is, I don't remember what that exercise is, but that really helps me when I'm in that moment where I'm kind of panicking and I'm saying, like, if we travel, if we go on a plane, all four of us, because me, my husband, and my two kids, that's my immediate thought is, oh my gosh, this plane's going to fall and we're all going to die, like all of us.
Yeah.
And I'm going to literally watch my children die. And that's so scary for me.
Yeah. The
but
scariest
that's
thing.
The scariest thing. But that really helps me. I'm like, okay, like, what can I see? What can I touch?
Yeah.
You know, what can I taste? And it just kind of grounds me. And I'm like, it's not happening right now. We're okay.
I'm nodding and I'm laughing because I went through a period of time where I was having panic attacks. And this is after I had a post-traumatic, after the arrival of my baby, I had a C-section and had a really bad infection, had to be in the hospital for 5 days. Anyway, I developed panic attacks from that. But working with my therapist, that's the tool that my therapist gave me was 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, like the anchoring or grounding. And she was like, start practicing before you have a panic attack so you kind of have it accessible. And it works because the panic attack and the fear is future, right? It's like all the things that haven't happened, catastrophic, horrible things. And then you come to the present, it's like, oh, I'm well, I'm fine. Like everything's okay. So I really love that tool and I'm glad that you're bringing it up and sharing it because it doesn't cost anything.
Yeah.
To use that. And also it's a nice tool even when you're like, oh man, my mind is so busy. It's like making million lists, like all the things I got to do. You're not here right now. That's also a nice tool to bring you to the moment. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that tool's a lifesaver for me. So I probably do that multiple times a day. So thank you for reiterating that. You also had sent us a really cool DM on our podcast page that kind of got me thinking for a few days. Like I was like, oh my gosh, she has a good point. You know, and you talked a lot about how saying our fears out loud, like the power of, you know, saying them out loud and kind of sharing that with the people around us and they kind of lose the power. Can you elaborate on how acknowledging and sharing our fears can diminish their power, especially within the Latino culture?
Yeah, I think that ultimately besides giving it a voice, right? Like it's the acknowledgement of the experience, the emotion, the narrative. I feel like when you don't share, like it's like the closet door and then you're stuffing it with coats and boxes and things. It's just ready to burst at some point and you open the door and just whacks you in the face, right? Because there's so many things you stuffed in there. But when you're ongoing, like sharing, bringing it out, you're releasing what that energy and emotion that emotions carry, right? That's what the emotions are. There's an energy to this feeling, this thought. You're just releasing it. You're not building it. So, like, number one is that piece. Number two, I feel like there's such a power in saying it out loud to somebody else in a community, in a small, like, two, three, four. Like, it's the being seen and heard in our vulnerable moments. Like, that to me is so powerful just for yourself. And then on the other side, if I'm listening to you share something that you're like, I'm afraid, like you just shared about my children, something like, wow, I'm with you. I share that fear. And what can I do? So it's that cultivation of connection, I feel, through vulnerability. Like, how beautiful. To bring us together through something so authentic, which is sharing what's the fears that are in your heart, the fears that are in yourself. Like, I don't think there could be anything more beautiful to bring people together, you know, like in community with each other.
Yeah, and it's kind of like we're kind of all battling with this together, right? And so it makes you also feel maybe less alone and in a way kind of empowered because you have these people on your side, right? Like if you're
Yeah.
all, you know, and also somebody else had said something to us about, you know, how sometimes when you say a fear out loud, you realize that it's maybe a little silly or it's not that scary, you know? Like I had shared with Yvette a long time ago how one of my fears is that I'm gonna go through TSA and I'm gonna be arrested because somebody else who looks like me or has my name committed a horrible crime.
Same,
And
same.
yeah. And so
So
we kind of
true.
laughed about it and we're like, that's such a ridiculous fear. You know, but it's like help saying it out loud kind of helped us both to kind of laugh about it.
Confirm, right, that this
Yeah.
is like a funny thought, right? But you know, at one point it felt real and true to you, and the more you probably share and you see a reaction, like, oh yeah, that's kind of funny actually.
Yeah. And so the more people that I share it with and we kind of laugh about it, it's helped me be less afraid of that because I'm like, it's so ridiculous. Like, it's not going to happen, Myra.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So you've spoken about fear being a significant ingredient in our upbringing, as you just said, in the Latino culture. I know I've had a lot of experience with it. I'm sure Yvette's had experience with it. You know, even like, vete a dormir porque si no el cucuy, you know, el cucuy va a venir. Like, just like little
The
things.
dark, yeah, afraid of all these little things that happen after dark. The police, like,
The
was
police.
one I would hear a lot growing up.
Yeah, so it's like in our culture, it's very like ingrained in us, right? That fear. And I'm sure our parents had good intention. I don't think they did it,
Sure.
you know, they weren't intending for this to happen, but it does cause a lot of fear as adults now, right? Like as a
And
consequence,
anxiety, right? Because,
anxiety. Yeah.
yeah.
So how do you think this impacts self-limiting beliefs in our community and what steps can we take to overcome them?
Oh my God, so many of our self-limiting beliefs are rooted in this fear. I remember my team at the winery, my team was mostly Spanish speaking, cross the border 15, 20 years ago to give their families a better life. So that culture, right? Coming from fear, authority, the fear of authority, which is ultimately like the police is gonna get you if you don't do your homework, you know. Whatever those dialogues were when you were little, I feel like right now is stopping a lot of even entrepreneurs that are like, oh, if I go do this, I'm gonna be, you know, they're gonna find something with me. Like, I'm trying to find an example, but I see it, I hear it in my clients, I seen it in my employees previously, and it's like, wait, you don't have to ask for permission anymore. You're an adult. You are a law-abiding citizen. No, but the dialogue is there where we what we develop the self-limiting belief is one of like hiding, or I'm not gonna ask. I'm afraid to even ask. Sometimes is the limitation as well, and it's like, no, that's actually hurting your business to not put yourself out, step out, Yeah, I'm trying to find an example, but it's like I'm having a hard time right now. But that's how I see it manifest. It's like feeling that you need to ask for permission to go after some things. And
Yeah.
it's like, no, you don't. There's no authority here. There's no, your mom is not going to yell at you or your, et cetera, or the police are going to catch you, or all the things that you thought were going to happen. And therefore, some people are just paralyzed and don't take action. And I mean taking action towards something that would benefit them, their business, their family, their growth. Like, that's where I see some of those fears that are still present and alive for some people that are not serving them.
Yeah, I remember the police being a big one, and then when I was in college, one of my professors talked about how that if we, continued that with our children, it was going to be like this huge disservice because we're teaching them to be afraid of somebody who's supposed to come to their aid if they need help, right? So it's like I really wanted to make sure that I didn't pass well, a lot of fears onto my children, but especially that being one of them, because I'm like, if they're ever in trouble, they're gonna have to call the police. I want them to call 911.
Right.
I don't want them to be afraid and be like, oh no, but they're gonna, do something horrible to me or something. So yeah, it's you're right. It's caused a lot of fear and so many different things. And it's also hard for me to kind of think of one example other than like the police one, because I just feel like it's so deeply ingrained in everything. So
Yeah.
it's kind of hard to pinpoint just one example because it really is everywhere in
Yeah.
our childhood.
Yeah. Oh, I think it kind of came to me about authority, and that's not just the police. Like in my home, everything was about asking for permission. Like, I want to go to my friend's house. And then in my home, it would be my mom and my dad. And my dad was, the bad cop. My mom was a good cop, but very authoritative, scary kind of authoritative. So I created that model of asking for permission for everything, which then gets in your self-reliance and you're building trust and capability within yourself. Because it was like you couldn't move a finger unless you asked dad, and dad likely would say no. Or you had to work very hard for it to go get permission. Like, if I want to go on the weekend, go to the mall, I don't know. Oh, did you do your homework? Did you do this? Did you get A's? Did you blah, 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 all the list of things? And then you would get maybe a yes. But what I'm saying is, I found myself in my 20s holding back, kind of like asking for permission. But it's like, who are you going to ask for permission? Mommy and daddy are not here. But you still feel like others are like authority. Right? Like it could have been your professor, it could be your boss, it could be like anybody that you feel that you are in a different position than, right, when it comes to authority. And so like if you're in a job and you're like, I've been in this job for 5 years, I've not gotten a raise, or I don't know how I'm progressing, stop waiting to be told, ask, hey, I am interested in growing. What would it take for me to get a raise, or what would it take for me to XYZ? Because I feel like the limiting belief again has been, I'm waiting for permission. I'm waiting to be told.
Yeah.
And so we got to challenge that. We got to go after it, which I feel like in my home, that wasn't a mentality that was fostered. It wasn't like, go get it, go ask for it, go do it. It was like, ask for permission. Number like
Yeah. Or
that
even
is
like once,
safety.
sorry, or even once they said no, you were like, okay, like that was the end of it, right? There was
Yes.
no questioning the authority or like, but why,
Yeah.
like because I said so, something
Correct.
like, yeah. So, but how do you think we can, because that kind of got me thinking, like, even with my daughter, she's 17 and she still, she comes and asks us for permission, and it is kind of the same thing. Like, I'm more lenient, my husband's more strict. So how would you recommend that we kind of, I don't know, like, not foster that within our own children, even though, I mean, in a way, they kind of still have to ask for permission, right?
Yeah, I think it's also good to recognize that it happens in phases, right? Like the brain is not fully developed until you're 25 or 27 when it comes to our children, I mean, that's what I'm referring to. And they need to stay in a stage, you know, where permission to develop an understanding of safety, like with the education component, is needed, right? As you see your child developing through some of those stages, then you move it up to, this is how we're going to shift out of this permission and push forward to the go after it, if that makes sense, right? Because my child is 3. My job is to protect him from the dangers of the world, help equip him, prepare himself, asking, using his voice, those kind of skills. I can't bring in an advanced skill at this age. So I think of it, even your daughter is 17, you'd think like, oh, she's mature and intelligent. Well, yes, but the brain is not fully developed until 25, and they would have that full understanding and common sense. So I think it's just kind of goes in stages and understanding. I think you're doing a great job guiding them, showing them where the boundaries is, and then to recognize in her development at what stage then you then start to change the dialogue and maybe introduce her to that. Honey, at some point, you know, you won't need to ask for permission. It will all come from your initiative and doing. You know, it's important to have kind of like that conversation, I'd say, but.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I do tell her, like, one day you're gonna, you know, call all the shots and make all of the decisions. We're kind of just here to help you, you know, kind of figure out things on for yourself, you know, to keep you safe and things like that. But I mean, even for me, like, I'll tell her, like, gosh, I sometimes sit here and think, like, I don't have to ask anyone for permission anymore, and it blows my mind. And I'm 38. So it's like, and I'm still every day, I'm like, I don't have to ask anyone for permission. Like, I'm good, you know. But I do tell her that, like, you know, it's trippy, but you will get to that point, I promise.
Yeah. And then it takes you a moment to embrace that, right? And own it and acknowledge. And it's like, oh yeah, of course, I don't need permission. Like, of course, I'm gonna go do this now, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. You did talk a little bit right now about how you experienced a lot of separational anxiety and panic attacks after you had your son. How did you learn to deal with that? Because I'm sure it's something that you still have to deal with every day. I don't know, maybe you have, but maybe it's not something that you've completely overcome. So on a daily basis, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, so I have to say that that started 3.5 years ago, right? After his birth. It has gotten like 95% better. So I want to say that if you are a mom and you are experiencing a lot of separation anxiety where it feels crippling to your focus, to your job, like I'm trying to work and I can't stop but check on my kid and text the babysitter and check the camera and all these things, right? It will get better, especially if you're receiving support through therapy or counseling or other modality. So I feel like the first step is just to identify, do I need further support? Is this like a healthy amount of separation anxiety that I'm experiencing, or am I being obsessive? I'm in this thought where like I can't stop thinking about my child's safety. Like you gotta distinguish where the line is to say I need further help. Because if you're in a pattern, which is where I was anxious. I would be checking the monitor continuously, getting an update. It's like that horrible micromanager boss, right? And I couldn't focus in what I was doing at the time. I was starting my business, and I was so unproductive. And it was, again, it was damaging to the little free time I had. It was not constructive because my separation anxiety was in an unhealthy place. So that step number one is to recognize, oh, I need help, right? This is not normal. So I got help. That's what I'm saying, that help through therapy has really marked a difference. Other steps outside of that where you're like, okay, I don't have a trauma related to it. Lean into trust, right? Like if somebody's taking care of your child, if it's a babysitter or school or other, how can you develop more trust in the environment and the people that are caring for your kids? Like what would bring you more Sense of tranquility while your child's not with you because it's being taken care of by somebody else. Like, is there an opportunity to cultivate that kind of trust, right? Because fear wants to have a sense of control. Like, fear wants to have it all figured out. Like, I got it. I know what you're doing. It's this thing. I watch it. I see it. Like, fear wants control, feeds on control. But ultimately, what the answer is trust, right? Trust in yourself, trust in the, again, if there's a caregiver involved, it's leaning into that space of, am I at trust and at ease and at peace with the situation that I'm under right now? And if it's not, well, really look at it. Why? Right? It has something to say. It has an important message that needs to be recognized.
Yeah, and that's probably helped. Has that helped you a lot with your coaching as well? Because I'm sure that you probably hear a lot of the similar stories about other women that have kind of dealt with this, or men.
Yeah. Mostly women. I work with women. I'm committed to supporting women. I welcome men in my practice, but yeah, women are my focus, my mission, my place of service.
Yeah, I know. We've been trying to get more men onto the podcast too.
Yeah.
Come on, we welcome you. You're all welcome here, you know. But we found that women are more willing and open to share, whereas men, not so much. You know, they don't
Right.
want to kind of come into this vulnerable conversation where they have to talk about things they're afraid of, you know.
Right.
But we understand.
Same with coaching. Like, I don't need help. I'm good. Like,
So, but you can work with men, or it's not just.
yeah, no, I welcome it. Actually, in the past, I've coached male leaders because, as you might know, many of our workspaces are still male dominated. In my 17 years, I was usually the one or two or three female in leadership. Like, that was the case, and that's still the case in so many places. So I'm usually hired by men seeking to support the female leaders in their teams to help them elevate. So it comes from a really good place, like, of care. I want to see you grow, but not for me, for them.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you are doing this really cool Bali retreat, right? In this year, in May, I believe.
Yeah, in May. Yeah.
Yeah, so I just recently found out about it, and I think that's really, really cool. I don't know if there's any space available because I think it's like very limited space. But can you tell us a little bit more about it? You know, what do people ex what is will people what will people expect? What will kind of happen, or what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, thank you for asking. It's happening in May 16th through the 22nd. And it's a week of reconnecting with yourself. And what I mean by that is, we're caught up in our daily lives and our routines and our to-dos. How do you make time to connect with yourself? And I'm curious for you, Maida, and for you, Yvette, like, what is one thing that you say, oh, this is how I give myself, not just self-care. I mean, more than self-care. It's like checking in with myself and connecting with myself.
I don't think I do. It's like everything's so go go. So it's like the only time I would is like if I journaled or if I did to-do lists or it's just, but that's just part of your routine. It's no me time and things like that. And I would say like my shower time is probably like the longest. That's not me time, but that's about it. Like, I don't know. Maybe I don't think about it. I just, when I'm tired and super anxious, I just like take a nap and I zone out, but I don't really connect with myself, I guess. I did through yoga when I would do the exercise and therapy, but other than that, I would start going down rabbit holes and I was like, I don't like this. Like, I don't know. And I think the therapist was like, oh, that's because you're evolutionizing and you're like changing the way you're thinking. 'Cause I started like questioning weird things like, why am I married? Why do I have kids? And all this stuff. And I was like, because I wanted it to be this way. Like, what? I didn't understand. Like, I was so, and I think it scared me. I was like, why am I asking myself all these questions? And
Yeah,
am
no,
I going
that's
crazy? Like,
awesome.
it was weird. And I was like, I don't know. It scared me away, kind of, but.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. So that's a perfect example of this is how I kind of take time for myself. How about you, Maida?
It's funny because Yvette mentioned the shower, and that's exactly like at night. I usually take 2 showers a day, TMI, I don't know, but I take one in the morning and then I always take one right before I go to bed. And it's that's kind of the time where I just like talk to myself and kind of check in with myself. I usually pray at that time too and have, my conversations with God. And the other thing that I do for myself every day is I read. I don't know if it's really self-care, but I love reading. I really enjoy it. And I make a point to read every single day, even if it's just one chapter, if that's all I can do. But when I started going back to therapy, my therapist was kind of like, because we would talk about how I always felt sad and I always felt depressed. And she's like, well, because you're not doing anything for yourself. It's like you're not even a person anymore. Myra doesn't exist. You're just a mom and a wife, but Myra doesn't exist in your life. And so that was one of the things that she was like, what did you really like to do when you were younger? And one of the things that I loved doing was reading. So I started reading again. And that's kind of when I started dreaming again. Like it was
Oh.
like it really just got my mind like dreaming and kind of believing in myself again. And
Yeah.
that's kind of like where the idea of the podcast came to be as well. So yeah, I love reading.
But I'm like, yes, because what I'm hearing in that is that in that space of reconnecting to your with yourself, like, and it starts with doing this thing you love. It opened you back up to dreaming. And following your passion, like then your passion started to kind of bubble up, like, what about a podcast? What about this? And here you are. So again, back to the power of reconnecting with yourself, giving yourself the space and the time to do that. So the retreat is a very luxurious, a long amount of time to do that, right? It's 7 days. You're traveling to Asia. It's in Bali. It's in Indonesia. It's in a beautiful island. I call it the island of gratitude. And it's that. It's the opportunity to reconnect with yourself in a bigger way. And I do that through offering hatha yoga, meditation, sound healing, Reiki. I work with a lot of practitioners and healers. And in Bali, this is going to be my 7th visit. I've been going to Bali since 2016. At the time, I was going through a divorce, moved from Tennessee to here for a job, and I was a mess. And my coach had was leading a retreat in Bali, and I followed her to Bali. And through that experience, it was so healing and so invigorating, rejuvenating for me that I kept going back to Bali to continue to find myself, right? It's like, who am I? What do I like? Like the questioning that Yvette mentioned, right? Like, do I want to marry again? Do I want to be a mom? Do I want to, all the things that you never take the time to question. And through that continuous experience, I was just like, oh, I want to offer this to women because we don't do that. We don't do that in a space of sisterhood where, again, this amount of time where you're like removing yourself, traveling far away to focus on you, right? Because we've also been raised with the belief that that's selfish, right? Like especially women, like you're here to serve, be a mom, serve the community, serve your family, serve everyone. It's like you first, you're last. So I want to give you back. So this is a week of that. And through that reconnection, so when everything starts, when all the noise is kind of pushed away, then you start to really connect with your essence, your dreams, your values. Like, then you get into that place of like, what's possible for me? And that's why I love this retreat to give women that space and that opportunity to discover themselves in a deeper, new way, in a more profound way. So, yeah, that's that in a week. But I want to say that not everybody can take a week, 10 days to travel, right? But I invite you to bring in some practices that give you that. Like for me, it's meditation. Like I started meditating in 2017, and it was like 5 minutes. Like, let me see what that's about. And I'm gonna sit with myself. It's sitting with yourself, basically. You're not doing anything for anyone. You are sitting to observe your internal landscape. Like, what's happening here? What's happening on the inside? How's my breathing? Oh, am I anxious? Did I have an anxious day? Did I have a lot of stress and tension? It's kind of like how you take inventory of yourself. But to some people, you know, they're like, oh, I have a hard time meditating. I can't sit down. Journal, right? Like, do any practice where you can say, I'm going to give myself 1 minute. Like, start at 1 minute and then move up to 5 or 10, et cetera, where again, you are doing something to connect with your voice, with your desires, like that, because you're giving out so much to everyone every day. And you need to cultivate the plant that you are, you know, that the tree that you need to build on those roots. And that to me is like the invitation for everyone to do that. Cultivate, take a practice where you're checking in with yourself, and it's free. Like, you don't have to go do anything anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just with yourself. It's time with yourself.
And you're right, a lot of times because you know, we are told as women that everyone else kind of comes first, it can feel, you know, selfish. I know Yvette has talked about this a lot, how, you know, when she does stuff for herself, she feels selfish. But
Guilt, right? Then there's a lot of
yeah.
guilt.
Yes.
But I do encourage her to do it, because I know for me, the kind of thing that kind of shifted my mentality was when my therapist said, this is what you're modeling for your daughter. I was like, oh my God, like, I never want my daughter to think that she has to be last. Like, no. If she should never feel guilty. If she wants to go have lunch with her friends or lunch by herself, or she needs to go and she has a, you know, kids at home and she needs to go to the bathroom for 5 minutes to just give herself a breather, like, I want her to know that that's okay. So it's like, if I want her to do that, then I have to show her that I'm doing that for myself, because that's what she learns by what she's seeing, right? Not necessarily by what I tell her. So I do
Wow.
invite Yvette to kind of hopefully be able to see that and do it for herself, because she also has a daughter.
Yeah. I think for me, it's hard. Like, when I had my first panic attack, like, that was my first fear. Like, I'm dying, and my kids are gonna be like, my baby was small. She was like, two, I think almost two. And I was like, what's gonna happen? Like, for the rest of her life, I die. And I literally thought, like, I have, you know, it was still COVID times. There were so many different things going around. I had just gone, I think it was like a weekend away, and I was like, maybe it was something we caught. I don't know. Like, what do I do? But then it was like, I couldn't breathe. I ran outside, and I was like, maybe my lungs are dysfunctioning. Maybe I got diabetes, and my parents, like, I can
Right,
inherit
all the fears are rolling in
everything
right
went
now in the
wrong.
worst
And
time.
yes, and so then from there, I'm like, my kids, everything after that is like, my kids are number one. And it, traveling is hard for me without my kids. Doing anything without my kids is really hard. So when I go out and I push myself to do the networking events and do things like that, because I need to get out of the house and need to do things for myself. And then it also rewards me because I'm talking about my business, which are things that I love to do. And it's really fulfilling because I like to help people. And then at the end of the day, that's what fills my cup outside of being a mom. But then I can't do it far away. Like, if it's a trip far away and they're like, you have to go do this, I'm like, I can't. Like, I cannot. And so I think when you're talking about something you talked about earlier, when you have that fear, like, acknowledging the fear and then sitting with it and like, how do I cope with it in the moment? That's what I'm missing. I need to go into that part because I honestly let it control me, and then I'm like, oh my God, well, I didn't do it now because, you know, I'm so stuck in this fear. However, like, there's things that I have to work on. And journaling is something that I really love to do. But I'm like, I lose track. Like, what do I write about? Then my mind just goes blank. And I'm like, I love writing, but what do I say? What do I write? Like, the same thing every day. Like, I'm grateful for myself. I'm grateful for. I lose myself when I'm like, what am I supposed to be writing?
Yeah, I think some people say that there's this like practice of like you're sitting into it and letting the words flow, where you're like, I don't know what to write, and then eventually something flows and you set a timer. I think it's how you
Okay. Well, I gotta look
kind of do
into that.
that. But
Okay.
I want to speak to how your fears and how you've been coping and your recognition of that. I think that's huge to even say, at this stage of my life, I'm capable of recognizing right now that I'm in fear and it's pushing me to follow its course, versus I'm acting from a place of choice, right?
Yeah.
So it's good to also say, this is where I'm at with it. And as I keep practicing, I know that I will develop, back to what the therapist said, I will develop more capacity, more range to not let it overrule me.
Yeah.
So I just want to bring some compassion into the journey, right? Because it's all a learning and ongoing journey. And I want to mention about panic attacks. Like when I did my first Bali retreat, so the idea first happened in 2019, that I want to do the retreat. Then COVID happened. So then the first one happened in 2023. And I was in the thick of the panic attacks. And but I had been working with my therapist. I told my therapist, look, I have this trip. I'm going for 10 days. This will be the first time that I'm separating again from my child, besides my hospital separation. This will be this is like the graduation. I felt like that was like graduation day, for the journey that I was at the moment. And I had the tools. I had the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, all the things. And I remember my friend was picking me up at the airport, one of the ladies that was traveling with me. And I here was paralyzed, having a panic attack. And like, why am I doing this? Why are you going? Like, I remember, like, I was able to put my child to bed. Like, it was like right before his bedtime. And as I was sitting holding him, I was just crying and panicking. And like, I remember my heart racing and just like, why am I doing this? This is stupid, blah, blah, blah. I mean, and then I started practicing the grounding, right? And to reconnect with your purpose. So that's the other invitation when fear is here and it feels so muddy. What is your intention or your purpose at that moment for that connected to the activity? In that moment, for me, doing this retreat was like, it's a life mission of mine to help women reconnect with their power, with their essence. Like, it's a calling that it's in my heart. Like, I had been working all this time to make it happen. And that was the moment that it required me to have a lot of courage to get over my panic attack and my fear of not being with my son for the first time for 10 days. Like, that was so huge. But again, the anchoring yourself in the mission. What is the mission or the intention that you have right at that moment that would help you leave the fear floor? And so I just want to offer that as well, because I've come to that other times when I've had like panic attacks, and it's like, okay, what's my high ground basically? Because it's like when you're in panic, you're like in the muck, in the mud, you're stuck. Like you can't see your way out of it. But if like you have like the lifeline to what's my bigger vision here? What's my intention? What did I want to get out? Like that will help you pull yourself out of those really scary and bleak moments, because that's what it feels like. Like it feels like you've forgotten all your wits about you are gone, you know?
Yeah, it's just weird. Like for me, it's like, well, what startled, like where I got my panic attacks was like a lot of different, like putting myself last on the back burner and then prioritizing my work and everything before anything that fed me, right? And so I was like, how did that make everything else in my life much more complicated? Like I just don't understand, you know? I'm like, now I triple guess myself in everything that I do, and I'm like, this has nothing to do with how I got here. Like I'm just But at the same time, I'm like, I'm so, I guess, I give myself grace in those moments, but I'm just like, why am I so much slower? I don't know, very frustrating sometimes.
Yeah. I do want to answer what you're wondering, and it's like it's what's happening in your brain. So fear activates the amygdala, which then the amygdala is like threat, alarm, woo, 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 lights on. Let's get ourselves to safety. And so sometimes when the threat is so intense or the fear, you lose all the executive functioning, which is in your prefrontal cortex. That's what it's called. It's like in this part of the brain, it's like the execution, the how to, the like all that is lost in that moment. So it's just not available because your brain's job is to keep you safe. Like you're breathing, you're alive, I'm doing my job. But then if fear is here, that's all I'm gonna do is try to keep you safe. So there's no additional capacities available. So I also want to mention that and encourage people that if you're finding yourself in fear every day, and I know right now this is a climate of fear right now, with all the immigration worries and what's happening in political realm. I get it, but I want to remind people, like, educate yourself, right? First, have a contingency plan, educate yourself, ask for help, but don't give yourself into fear every day because you are losing your executive functioning, your capacity to think and act from a rational place when you're staying in fear. You're losing that. That's just not available because the brain cannot do both at the same time. So I want to offer that to your listeners.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, that's really wow, that left me kind of speechless almost because it makes so much sense. But it's also something I've never really thought about. That like fight or flight, right? It's like you're saying it
Yeah.
can't do both things. It can't keep you safe and allow you to think critically at the same time. So wow, that was really powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that with our listeners. I'm sure that I mean I know some of them are gonna be just as like, wow, blown away as I am right now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. And I hope so because my purpose is to help people feel empowered, right? Like, yes, there's other ways. And the more you know yourself, the more empowered you can feel to take a different action.
Yeah, kind of like what you said at the beginning when you said, you know, you can be afraid, but you also have a choice, right? And I think that knowing that you have a choice, you don't have to stay here or be stuck here. I think that does help people feel really empowered. I know it helps me feel empowered, you know, to think like, you're right. Like, I don't have to ask people for permission. I do have a choice. There is light at the end of the tunnel. You know, I can change something. Like you said, even if it's just like, as you were saying, like 1 minute that you kind of just like sit with yourself and just like, you know, ground yourself. And you talked a lot about being self-compassionate, like have a lot of self-compassion for yourself as well. And all of that is such good advice for our listeners who, you know, because in this whole podcast, that's what our goal is, you know, to help people deal with fear on a daily basis and not allow it to hold them back from doing the things that they want to do and living their best life.
Yeah, beautiful.
And being
And then,
empowered.
yeah, and if ultimately you're like, I'm trying to do all these things, seek help, you know, like, I'd love to help you. Here are the ladies on the podcast as well, that they have a wealth of wisdom and experiences. Or, you know, what are your resources through some of the community offerings? Not everything is a paid thing, right? So, know that there's resources available. Sometimes it just takes reaching out. Like, I have a wealth of resources as well because to get to this wisdom that I have, I had to do a lot of inner work to work through the muck and get stuck and get to another level, right? I didn't do it alone. So, I'm also happy to be a resource for your community and, you know, if somebody has a question about something.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that to our listeners. So what are your future aspirations for your coaching practice and retreats? Is the Bali retreat, is that something that you do every year? Or is it just, you know, every couple of years?
Yeah, so far it's been every year since I started in 23. And after I go and come back, I check in with myself. Is this still feeling like a calling? Is this the way that I still want to express this mission of helping women kind of reconnect with themselves? In addition to coaching, like that's my number one passion is like through the coaching because it's a private space, it's confidential. I'm your thinking partner. And the other thing I love to do is just help women reconnect. Like, again, we're so in our heads, we live in our heads. I love reconnecting women with their wisdom, their heart. Like, there's so much information and wisdom and joy here. But again, by yourself, it's really hard to do it. So, also through my coaching, I support women in that way. I have an upcoming workshop in my home. It's actually this Friday. I don't do a lot of in person, to be honest. I work mostly remotely or in Bali. But sometimes I feel called to do an event, and this one is here in my house, and I call it Growth and Gratitude. It's the second one. Last year it was sold out, and again, it was a beautiful space for reflection, taking inventory, celebrating your highlights of your year. acknowledging also what didn't work out so well, because it's not just, oh, happy, oh, good, oh, positive. No, you have to, come from a sincere place and say, oh, this situation happened. It didn't go so well, but I'm gonna see it with compassion. I'm not gonna beat myself over it. But I know there's a nugget of wisdom in that situation that didn't go so well for me, or that I could have showed up differently. So I'm gonna integrate that also as well in my learning. So this is that workshop is the opportunity to do that. I guide you through all that. And gosh, for my business, I am really excited to have the opportunity to speak, because another thing of childhood was silence was safety in my household, because again, my dad was very loud, and to me it was very scary, and it was yes sir, no sir, like very constricted. So I'm breaking out of that. Like, I'm safe. I have a voice. I am passionate. I have a lot I want to share. And my message is about empowering women and professionals. Men as well are welcome, but it's helping people reconnect with their power. And I love the opportunity to have the stage or the Zoom room to guide your audience through that. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm envisioning for myself for this year. And maybe other retreat locations will come up. I'm not sure. I picked Bali because, oh, Bali has such a, even thinking about Bali made me like, oh. There's something happening energetically there where you just feel more grounded, more peace, and it's like it's easier to connect with yourself. It's not just that you're on vacation, but there's truly something energetically happening in Bali. And also their culture infuses everything they do with gratitude. Like, they start their day giving thanks, doing an offering to their gods. Like, you see that this place of gratitude in the streets where you're staying. The scent of the incense, again, in the practice of gratitude, it just covers your body and your soul with that beautiful, beautiful feeling. So I haven't found that anywhere else yet, and that's why I also love bringing women there to absorb that, because it's truly transformative. One of the things that always comes out from the feedback about going to Bali is that, oh, the gratitude practices that you bring back into your life, like the way of being, observing, witnessing, and bringing that in yourself, it's very transformative. So yeah, I'm always like on the lookout, right? I'm always like, where to next? Where is the next place to make a difference? I also welcome collaborations right now, like even through workshops or coaching or events. I'm in a place where I'm like, I know there's a lot of other really cool women making a difference, wanting to help empower others. Like, how can we do it together? Like we're doing here right now, right? Having this conversation. But I believe in supporting each other and elevating each other. Like, have I felt like at times in competition, at moments, yeah, sometimes somebody comes across and it triggers you, right? And you start to compare yourself. But then I go back to, wait a moment, why am I being triggered? Why am I not feeling supportive? Right? That's what I look at. And then I remember my vision, right? My vision and my mission here is to elevate women by elevating each other. Like, because the world needs this kind of unity in order for things to change. And that's how we create change, right? It starts with ourselves, the tiny steps that we take. But when you take them together, then that becomes more powerful. So.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. It reminded me of something that kind of happened this weekend where, Yvette and I had kind of had a lot of people start following us, and I was like really excited. And I think we were at like 180 followers on our Instagram page, which I know is not a lot, but it was a
That's
big deal.
huge. That's
Yeah.
exciting.
And then we lost two because I was like, I kept checking, right? And then we lost two, and then we had like 178. And I felt like really, like I kind of took it personal, like, oh my gosh, people don't like us. I don't know. Like, it just was like, messing with me. But I was like, Myra, like, we didn't, this isn't about likes. Like, that wasn't the purpose. We didn't start this because we wanted to have likes or have all these followers or we wanted to be liked. We really just wanted to make a difference, even if it was just one person that we touched. And so then I saw this other post where it was like, even if you didn't get likes, it doesn't mean it wasn't, impactful or something like that. And I'm like, yes, like that's what we want. Even if it just helps one person, then we've done our job. We are, it's like that's what we're doing it for. We're not doing it for the likes.
Yeah. And to that point, I want to say that even if this gets aired, publicized, etc., there's no likes, there's whatever, you both have made a difference to me by giving me this space, because it's like this desire for me to, again, come out of my fear, come out of my safety, bring my voice out. That to me is so powerful. So you already made a difference to me. And I just want to say thank you for that.
Oh, you made this feel so special. Thank you.
Yeah, it's that meaningful to me. And anybody that gives me, again, that opportunity to have that space, I'm just like deep in my heart, I'm moved and I'm just grateful.
Yeah, no, I'm very moved by you too. And I love this episode. And like you said, even if nobody watches it, the fact that I was here talking to you and Yvette, like that just made my
You
whole.
already made a difference to my
Yeah, I
life.
had already made a difference in my life, and it's like, it's like it'll trickle down to other things, right? Because it's like it's already touched me. It's going to touch my children, So,
Yeah.
thank you. You've definitely made an impact in my life as well.
Thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it. And everything that you've shared with us so far, I'm sure will touch more than one person. So, also, Myra, something that I've always go back to is something that my cousin always tells me. She's like, even if it's 80 people, think about it in a room, right? 80 people in a room and you yourself, like that's a personal connection. Doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a million people. When it
Right.
becomes that big, like how do you really connect with people? I feel like it's less intimate and then you can become more stressed out, right? Because it's like, how do I reach so many people at the same time? However, I feel like right now everything is small, but people are watching and people are listening and everybody, as long as somebody takes something from what we're talking about today, I feel like we've done our job.
Thank you. Yeah, you're right. If it was 178 people in a room with us, like that would be insane. So, yeah.
Yes.
There are two questions that we like to end all of our interviews with. And the
Okay.
first one is, what's the worst advice you've ever received? And then, what's the best advice that you've ever received?
Oh my goodness, the worst advice. Wow, I have to say it's not coming up, and I also have a poor memory when it comes to negative things. I think there is a point in my life where I was just like, I told my brain, nope, we're gonna filter out any negative. Like, and so I don't remember, like no faces coming up to say, yeah, you shouldn't have done that. So sorry, I don't have that. Gosh, the best advice, do it afraid.
Love
I love
that.
that. That's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect. That's the second time that we've heard that answer where they're like, nothing's coming to me. I've gone to the point in my life where I've kind of blocked out all of the negative energy in my life. So I actually like that answer. I think that's great that you've been able to do that because some people, kind of still hold on to that
Yeah.
negative advice that no longer serves them. So the fact that you've let it go is perfect. So where can people find you?
Yeah, I'd love to connect on Instagram, Myra underscore Hernandez underscore coaching. That's where I'm most active. Same information is on Facebook. I'm also on LinkedIn, but if we haven't met, happy to connect. Send me a DM. Yeah, happy to start a conversation from there.
We are very thankful for you, and I'm so glad I met you. I know it was been a while that we've talked online too, and then when I finally met you in person, I was like, it's so cool to face to a profile, which is amazing because I do work virtually too, so I don't get a lot of those in-person connections other than my
Likewise.
family, so.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. You are so amazing. And you could just see that you are really passionate about what you do. and your passion is infectious. So thank you so much. And I feel so grateful, so blessed, and so excited to just go out and share what I've learned with you here with, my daughter or when I pick her up from school. So thank you so much for everything. You are really, really amazing. And like you said, you've made such an impact on our both of our lives. And I know you're going to make an impact on our listeners. And if anyone needs to reach out or connect with you, we will have your information down in our link. Yeah, thank you so much. If you haven't already, like and subscribe to the channel.
Yep.
Follow us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. We thank you so much, and we will see you all next week.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Myra.